Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back. This is episode number 425. This week on the program, I've got a number of great articles for you, one of which I wrote. That's kind of weird saying it's a great article. I guess I'm biased. But I'll talk to you all about the importance of holding ourselves accountable when we have somebody within the fraternity or who's about to join the fraternity who is not the right kind of person to join. And the kind of person is somebody who may be a potential criminal or a convicted criminal, etc., etc. And so we'll talk a little bit about that. And then I've got a great piece from Todd E. Creason that talks about what we can do to make sure we don't reach Masonic burnout, if you will. And then I've got the culmination of this week, which is a keystone piece that I really loved that came out just this week. It made massive waves, got the attention of some great folks, and it's a wonderful piece that talks about the dangers of being too academic within our writings and studies and reading. Not that it's too academic, but that sometimes the academia pushes away some of the needed philosophical, some of the holistic value. It's not something that can be proven, etc. So we're going to touch on all that, but first I want to say thank you to all of our folks supporting the program. So if you support us through Patreon or if you support us via PayPal, these are our primary modes that we fund this program, so I want to thank all of you who are doing this. We have three levels to support this show, whether you like Patreon or you like PayPal, whichever suits you. Both of them, the levels are the same. We have a contributor level, which is $2 a month, a fellow level, which is $5 a month, and a producer level, which is $10 per month. What do you get for those dollars? Aside from having this great, fuzzy, warm feeling on the inside, that you're contributing to Masonic education and assisting in the production of this program, which is pretty awesome. You'll also get, for $2 a month, we'll put your name on the website and make sure that everybody knows you're involved in the production of this podcast. For $5 a month, you get that same thing. We'll put your name on the website and I'll send you a personalized thank you card in the mail. And at the $10 level, I will do both of those other things, but I'm also going to send you a producer's pin. So I want to thank you all in advance if it's something you're thinking about. And if you go from the $2 to the $10 or whatever you want to do, you'll get that added benefit as well. So it's not just locked in one-time deal. If you are a $2 contributor and you decide, hey, I got a little extra this month, I want to go up to the producer level for a couple months or something, that's cool. I'll send you the pin and we'll take care of it. But in order to do that, you got to go to wcypodcast.com, click on support the show at the top, and you can read a little bit about how we do this. You can also make a one-time gift if you are so inclined. So once again, thank you to all of our current contributors, fellows, and producers. You guys make this whole thing possible. Now, if you don't want to support the show that way, we do have a few products that I do sell, which are the producer's pin that I do sell for $10. That's plus $3.50 shipping. It's a little bit more to ship internationally. We have the Mason's Lady decal. I think I only have a couple of these left, so if you want one, now's the time to get it. I'm not going to produce them again. And then I also have copies of It's Business Time, Adapting a Corporate Path for Freemasonry, which comes autographed from me. And if you don't want the book autographed, you can, of course, pick it up on Amazon.com, or you can get it on Audible. So if you want to listen to it, that's cool, too. We have Brother Jared Stanley of What is a Mason, who did all of the readings for the audio version of the book. So that's all out there. And lastly, before we get to this week's first article, I want to remind everybody that in January, the open enrollment for the Great Books program opens up. What is Great Books program? It is one of the best ways to support this program, and you get something out of it. You get an insane amount of information of intellectual value from this program. It's a Great Books program, which means you read a really classic, cool book. You talk about it with your friends. There's a classically trained interlocutor who comes in and assists with this stuff, with the conversations. It's all online. You have a massive community of dudes who help you with this, and some are brothers, some are not. But this is started by Brother Scott Hambricht, who's created, you know, one of the most interesting and engaging ways to enjoy a great books program. So check it out, wcypodcast.com. You're going to click on Our Friends, and then click on the Great Books Program, and you can read a little bit more about it. You'll get a crazy discount if you go through us. 25% off your first 3 months. It's pretty insane. I want to mention Franklin's Fortune. Franklin's Fortune is an amazing game. You can play with your friends and your family. I have so much fun playing this with my kids. We have just a ton of fun trying to see who is going to win this time and the strategies that go along with winning and how it's all possible. So it's a deck-building game. There's no like bonus things that you have to go out and buy additional cards or anything. It's not like Pokemon. It's a game that has a set number of cards and deck pieces, and you earn sterling, or that's your money. It's a great strategy game. My son Emmett, who is 10, destroys me when I play this game every time. I haven't figured out how to beat him yet. So please do check that out. Use a promo code WCY, and you'll get $5 off your order. It's a great thing to get, especially if you're running programs for a school or programs for like after-school programs, YMCA, or maybe Big Brothers Big Sisters. This is a really cool game that teaches virtue, which is so needed right now. Again, check that out, wcypodcast.com, and then just find our tab at the top, Our Friends, and then click on Franklin's Fortune, and you'll go right to where you need to be in order to pick that up. All right, so as promised, our first article is a piece called Masonry, No Hiding Place for Criminals or Shelter for Crime, by Midnight Freemason contributor Robert H. Johnson. Now, where did I get the title for this piece? It actually comes directly from a quote that came from the Grand Lodge Proceedings of the Grand Lodge of Illinois in 1870 by Harmon G. Reynolds, who was then the Grand Master, and he said, quote, "In this connection, permit me to say that Masonry is no hiding place for criminals or shelter for crime. If a Mason should be a good man and true, and should strictly obey the moral law, then we have no room in our lodges for criminals and deliberate violators of the law of the land, nor have we any use for lodges which harbor offenders against the peace and security of society. The idea that a Mason is to shield a brother guilty of crime or screen him from just punishment is a portion of the anti-Masonic code and is no sense justified by any Masonic teachings or practice." Grandmaster Harmon G. Reynolds, 1870. It goes without saying, doesn't it, that within the craft there would be no tolerance for anyone who is a criminal or who engages in acts that benefit a criminal organization or outfit. We take good men and make them even better. In our fraternity, we often use terminology like guarding the West Gate when referring to making sure that we select the right men to join the organization. And for the most part, we do. But as all Masons know, and maybe the public would have some clue to this as well, from time to time, we make a mistake. Becoming a Freemason involves a petitioning process in which much about the man's character is revealed. His faith is proclaimed, sometimes even disclosed. His residential address, place of employment, marital status, where he's resided, if he has a felony, if he can afford the fraternal costs, and much more, depending on your grand jurisdiction. When I first started writing for the Midnight Freemasons, I penned a piece titled The Brothers That Failed. It was a crudely put together piece in which I outlined some of the most egregious men to have joined our ranks. Our founder, editor at that time, Todd E. Creason, actually did some research on the members that I mentioned in the piece before he decided to publish it. Because making accusations is no small thing and is, in fact, a very serious matter, especially considering the results. You could deprive a man of his membership. Yes, we sometimes make a mistake and let someone in who is not the caliber of man we were told or led to believe that they were. Other times, though, a man commits a crime after becoming a Freemason. Our fraternity deals with these instances likely more times than we'd like to admit, but what can we expect? Mistakes happen. From jurisdiction to jurisdiction, the rules vary. A felony conviction in some jurisdiction bars a man from entering ever, while in others, like Illinois, it's the discretion of the lodge whether to accept a man who has a felony or not. In many jurisdictions, there are mandatory background checks, and where it is not mandatory, some lodges take that into their own hands and run these checks as a part of their universal process. The investigation committee is paramount, whether the background checks are done or not. The past Grand Master of Illinois, Greg Clark, recently addressed this, albeit briefly, in his outgoing address in October of 2019. Paraphrasing, he urged lodges to think about background checks and to use them in the petitioning process. Some of you are reading this might be thinking that that's too far. While your brothers in other jurisdictions know this to be standard practice, examples like Pennsylvania, where the Grand Lodge runs the background check, and any felony at all bars that man for life at the Grand Lodge level. No lodge can overturn it. And let's remember, Pennsylvania has the highest number of Masons in any state, 97,822 in 2017. Numbers from the MSA North America Membership Statistics. Earlier, when I said quote-unquote mistakes happen, it's important to understand the options we as Freemasons have and to understand fully the repercussions in the event that we do nothing when these men are found within our organization. To be a just and upright Mason concerned for the welfare of the craft over titles and accolades is a prudent path. The prudent path. Principles matter. Our past Grand Master in his 1870 address was no doubt dealing with many of the same things we deal with today in the craft, worldwide. His remarks are timeless, and yet one can barely believe that he had to address this concept at all, given who we are and what we stand for. The full text of his address can be found in the Grand Lodge Proceedings of 1870. For our Illinois brothers with access to Maury, you can find this document there. And for those who have access to the members section of the Illinois Lodge of Research website, you can search them there as well. May we ever be just and upright Masons. Well, I hope you enjoyed that piece. I really wrote that piece when I considered some conversations that I had had with brothers from out of state, and without going into detail, right, because it's really nobody's business, but I can speak kind of objectively, you know, from a distance and give vague ideas, but some states have Masonic, quote-unquote, investigators who have to go out and investigate when secretaries or treasurers are embezzling money, or, you know, there are crimes that are committed within the craft that aren't just craft-related. They might be whatever. There was a case not long ago in a grand jurisdiction of felony mail fraud. I mean, these things happen, and we can't catch them all, but it's important that when we find these things out, we handle them appropriately and quickly, because the repercussions for not doing so will blow up in our face every time. You know, we're supposed to be the best of the best. And what happens if we harbor somebody? Or as Harmon G. Reynolds says, the idea that a Mason is to shield a brother guilty of crime or screen him from just punishment, obviously this is happening, or it did happen, and I'm sure it still happens today to some extent. So I guess my message here is just make sure that we're standing up for the right thing every time, no matter what. I'll have a link back to that article if you would like to use it for any purpose. You know, of course, the Midnight Freemasons policy on any of our articles is that just make sure you print it in full and attribute back to the original author and the website. Now, before we move on to the next piece, I just wanted to go ahead and give a huge shout out to Evans Lodge for having me out to do the talk on colonial masonry. I had a great time. I saw so many great brothers out there that I hadn't seen in a little while, and I actually saw a couple brothers from my own lodge out there, so I wanted to thank the brothers from my own lodge, Brother Lee Braden, Gary Meisner, for coming out. It means a lot that they would come out and support me and to support Masonic education, but I also have to thank Brother Rob Wingater, who's my senior deacon at my lodge, and he's also the worshipful master of Evans 524 and he's doing some just incredible things. So thank you to Evans524 for all the things. My next talk will be in February. I'll be doing a talk at Libertyville 492, which is the same building my lodge meets in. Brother Patrick Sands, who is an awesome dude and brother, a very smart fellow, and he's put together something he wanted to do, which was a Masonic symposium, and he's really excited about it, and he's got a zeal for the fraternity that is rare. So he's put this together. It'll be on February 22nd, a couple months away, and I'll be talking about a topic brand new. I'll have a brand new talk that I've never given before. It's called The Ark and Freemasonry. I'll explore the legend of the Ark of the Covenant, historical facts, its relationship to Freemasonry, and of course some of that famous occult significance. So it'll be part of kind of an all-day symposium. I don't know if it'll be all day, but there's going to be some great talks that day, especially coming from Brother Spencer Hammond, who, I mean, I hope he's going to do a talk on tarot. He's got some great knowledge there, and I would love to hear him talk about it, so maybe he'll do that. Then after that, I'll be at the Southeastern Masonic Education Symposium. We've got a lot of great dudes who are coming out there. I'll be in Florida. You could get tickets. I have a link on the website where to buy tickets. It takes you back to that lodge's website. If you'd like to have me out, just send me an email. We'll figure it all out. I'm still kind of figuring out how this new section on our website works, where you just click it and you book an appointment. So if that seems confusing to you and you don't know how to work this like me, just shoot me an email. That's fine, too. So the next piece this week is called When the Masonic Light Burns Out. And again, a wonderful piece here by Midnight Freemason founder Todd E. Creason, 33rd degree. And as I read this, let's get reflective. And I hope that if this sounds like you, know that you're not alone and that we all kind of go through these times. And we'll talk a little bit about the message after the piece, but here we go. We spend so much of our time as Masons doing things, going to events, putting on fundraisers for this cause and that, attending degree work and Masonic funeral rites. We spend a lot of time in the car driving, sometimes long distances to attend meetings and events. And while we're in the car, many of us use that time to practice and rehearse degree parts. As a secretary, I spend a lot of time making sure dues are paid, meetings are announced, birthday cards go out, and keeping track of brothers in need or in sickness and distress. But the more active we are as Masons, the more at risk we are as well. How many times have we seen that Mason that was always involved in everything suddenly vanish? He just flames out. Done. It's not uncommon at all. In fact, I hear it all the time. And I get it a lot more now than I did a couple of years ago, because I found myself in the same boat. After a very long term in the East, much too long by anyone's standards, and after more than a dozen years as a Mason, I found I had very little energy left for the fraternity when I finally got out of that chair. I haven't written a book in several years. I have one nearly done. I just can't seem to get excited about finishing. I've struggled to even write pieces for the blog that I started. I don't feel like going to meetings, and I've missed a lot of them over the last year or so. Then I finally figure it out. And, as often is the case, the answer came from an unexpected source. I'm over 50 now, and in a few years I can retire with a pension. I have no intention of sitting around the house until I croak. I also have no desire to continue working at what I do now, although I certainly can. So the question is, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? I realized that I still have a strong desire to do what I originally wanted to do back when I graduated high school. I want to serve the church. That's not the path I wound up taking, but it certainly isn't too late to pursue it now. It's what the PC culture would call an encore career, and Monty Python would refer to as, and now for something totally different. And I have plenty of time before I retire to prepare myself with the necessary training and education to do that. I spent the summer finding out what I'd have to do to make that happen through my church. I've started ministerial training through the church already, and I start attending seminary classes in mid-January. But I was given a reading list of about 15 books by the seminary, some suggested reading to help prepare me for the seminary journey ahead. I'm sure they didn't expect me to read all 15 books, but since I'm through about 8 of them, I probably will. I've always loved to read, and I'm chewing through it quickly, reading hours on end and anxious to glean from the material things I can use. And I'm writing about what I'm reading, like I used to when I was reading so much about Freemasonry. And then the light bulb came on. For too many Freemasons like me, the focus on Freemasonry becomes about output instead of input. Doing things all the time. Output, output, output. And we never refuel ourselves with that knowledge that so fascinated us in the beginning of our journey. It sneaks up on you, and suddenly Freemasonry is just another job rather than a lifelong opportunity for personal growth, moral training, and character development. We put down the books and pick up the spatula in the kitchen or the minute book at the secretary's desk, and suddenly we're a volunteer employee rather than a traveler seeking the knowledge of our predecessors passed down to us. And for me, somebody that has been passionate about Masonic education since I joined, instead of being anxious to share something I've read, I wind up recycling something I already know because I gotta put something together for education next Thursday, and I haven't actually read anything I could share in some time. Hopefully, you'll learn something from my mistake. Your focus should be on building yourself, making yourself a better man. Focus on acquiring and applying that knowledge that is so abundant in our fraternity. We have dusty libraries all over of unread books. Read, study, learn. Be inspired. Input, input, input. You have to keep working on yourself. Output is the result of input. If you study history, and most especially industrious men like Thomas Jefferson or Benjamin Franklin, you'll find a few things they had in common. First of all, what they accomplished in their lifetimes seems impossible. The second thing you'll quickly learn is what they put out paled in comparison to what they took in, what they read, studied, and filled themselves with. Their tremendous contributions were the result of a passion fueled by what they took in. When you're inspired by what you're taking in, nothing becomes a job. It will become a self-fueling passion within you. Todd E. Creason. So yeah, this is a piece that hit home for me. Why? Because I am that output, output, output person, and you guys are too. I know it. If you're not that guy, maybe you know that guy. They go to every meeting. They are always on every committee. They're picking up the slack for everybody else. They're putting together newsletters that nobody's reading. But it's important to have this reflective time to think about you and to work on you by journaling or reading more about topics you're interested in. And to continue that, it's just really important to remember that this is about you. This is your journey. We don't join, get an apprentice degree, a fellowcraft degree, and a Master Mason degree, and then all of a sudden we think we're all done. You know, we're now qualified to write about things. We're now qualified to talk about things. That's not how this works. So it's just really important to remember, guys, gals, whoever's listening, focus on ourselves first. Do you know when you're flying in an airplane and they start with the safety briefing and they say, in the unlikely event of an emergency, an oxygen mask may drop down. You put the oxygen mask over your face, pull the elastic strap, and oxygen is flowing even though the bag doesn't inflate. And then what do they say? They say, secure your own mask before helping anybody else. And that's what I'm talking about. Take care of yourself first, because here's the thing. If you're in an airplane and you help somebody else with their mask, you could die first, and then guess what? Nobody's putting their mask on. So get your mask on first and then help them. Same thing with Masonic education. You have to know first so that when somebody else needs help and you can give output. All right. Now for the culmination of this episode, my last piece for this week. This is a wonderful piece, again, published by Angel Millar, and it's called Within Freemasonry, An Academic's Backlash Against Esotericism. Now, what this boils down to is a couple guys, Angel Millar and Jedediah French, wrote a book, a bunch of essays, personal stories kind of thing, called The Art and Science of Initiation, which has had some great reviews and some other reviews that were, well, interesting. And I think our brother Angel reads these reviews, and he had some choice words about not the reviewers or the reviews themselves, but about the general attitude in which some people take on the attitude of esotericism or internal philosophical work. And so he wrote this piece, and I just have to read it for you guys. Here we go. Within Freemasonry, an Academic Backlash Against Esotericism by Angel Millar. And you can read this right on his website. On page 60 on Freemasonry Today, or FMT as it now appears to be called, you will find a review of The Art and Science of Initiation, which I worked on with author Jedediah French. The review veers toward the positive, though the reviewer is clearly nervous about a book on initiation, especially when the types of initiation in question relate not only to Freemasonry, but to esotericism more broadly, and to spirituality in some occult orders, such as the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. I think we're all used to such old-fashioned nervousness. Old-fashioned because we no longer live in a time of religious conservatism in the West, but rather one in which New Age-type religion, yoga, Reiki, Buddhism, and 100 spiritual systems are readily available in every major city, a click away on the internet, and part of mainstream media culture. As I discussed recently with Greg Kaminsky for his Chamber of Reflection podcast, what has troubled me in recent months is the rising tide of academia, or perhaps even academic extremism, within small pockets of the Masonic fraternity. Only a few months ago, at a Masonic conference, I heard speaker after speaker state that if you write about Freemasonry, you must do so academically. You can write about the history of the craft, or the history of ritual, or the history of your lodge, but that's it. And even then, only on certain conditions. Do you have the original manuscripts in front of you? A reproduction won't do. Is it footnoted? Is it very, very dry and cautious? Don't get me wrong. I don't think people should make things up or repeat junk history. And I, too, despair when I see Freemasons lauding books that are little more than romantic fiction posing as a serious history. And there are plenty of those. However, while I don't claim to be an academic, I want you to know where I'm coming from. Make of it what you will. But I have written the only scholarly book on connections between Freemasonry and Islam, or at least Masonic and Islamic radical thinkers, between 1850 and roughly 1930, The Crescent and the Compass. It is a significant chapter in East-West relations, more broadly, that you will not find anywhere else in English. And it was reviewed favorably by a very harsh academic journal. Note, a French book on the same subject was published the same year as my Crescent and the Compass, so we must have been writing them at the same time. And, from what I can see, the contents are not exactly the same. I mentioned quite a few things not covered in the French book, and perhaps vice versa is true also. Writing the first ever scholarly book in English language on connections between Freemasonry and Islam in the modern age is no small thing. Islam is a subject of major interest in the West today, and it is incredible that with so many academics inside and outside of Freemasonry that no one wrote this history before me. But no one else wrote it because academia is inherently conservative. The average academic wants to reference other academic works. He wants to get tenure. He wants to be patted on the back. He doesn't want to blaze a trail. Academia is not the be-all and end-all of Freemasonry, and it should not be. The point of being initiated is not to write scholarly papers on what Freemasons used to do, but what we should presumably not do anymore. Freemasonry is an initiatic tradition, not a literary or scholarly one. It is a school for elevating the consciousness and actions of its members, not for footnoting papers. Freemasons are part of a living tradition of ritual, art, ideas, philosophy, and spirituality. To keep it alive, we need to think about things philosophically and from our personal experience, and we need to do so in light of the problems facing us today. The point is not to solve the world's issues, but to keep ourselves in balance so that we are not swept along by them. That means in one era we might need to emphasize one thing within Freemasonry, and in another era we might need to emphasize something else. The aim is to bring us to the archetypal truth and not to go with political flow or to go along with what those outside the craft might think. My latest book, The Three Stages of Initiatic Spirituality, Craftsman, Warrior, Magician, which will be released on February 11th, but you can pre-order it now from Amazon or Barnes & Noble, explores the initiation, symbols, myths, and practices of these vocations across time, from Freemasonry, alchemy, and Kabbalah, to ancient Greek philosophy and mythology, Buddhism, Hinduism, Tantra, the martial arts, sex magic, modern occultism, and the positive thinking movement. Is it academic? It is certainly founded on academic standards, but it goes beyond academia to explore initiation and initiatory practices that are relevant to living practitioners and seekers. Hence, Frater U.D., author of Secrets of Western Sex Magic, Magical Energy, and Gnostic Trance, has described the book as, quote, the result of a stunningly broad in-depth research both on the theoretical and on the practical level. A researcher practitioner at his very best, end quote. And Chuck Dunning, author of Contemplative Masonry, has said that, quote, anyone concerned with a comprehensive context in which to contemplate and facilitate their own initiatic and transformative journey will find this book worthy of repeated consultation, end quote. I believe that nothing quite like the three stages of initiatic spirituality, craftsman, warrior, magician, has been written before. In it, I not only explore Freemasonry and alchemy, etc., I introduce relatively little-known subjects, such as the Parisian martial art of Zorkhana and its spiritual aspects, and Taoist inner alchemy, among many others. And I do this not only as a historian, but crucially, as a practitioner of the martial arts and inner alchemy. Whatever I have written about in the book, I have first-hand experience of, at least from a comparable tradition. And I have written the work to give the reader something as close to an initiatory experience as a book possibly can. I believe the new emphasis being placed on writing about Freemasonry only from an academic perspective is a backlash against the rise in interest in esotericism, spirituality, alchemy, etc., that is so evident within Freemasonry today. The intention might be good. It might be to keep Freemasonry respectable, to keep it looking like a club focused solely on charity or a golf club with secrets. But we no longer live in an era where that is either necessary or relevant. Freemasonry has always been its most vibrant and growing when the members themselves have taken the lead, ritually, artistically, debating the symbols, focusing on the mysteries of Freemasonry, and putting on Masonic education. We saw that during the 18th century when Freemasonry exploded in popularity, especially in France and Germany. And we're seeing it again today. If you are going to write about the history of Freemasonry, I, too, encourage you to cite credible sources. However, if you are a Freemason, I encourage you not to mistake our fraternity for an academic club whose purpose is to fixate on bygone glory days. Our purpose is to live our tradition, to know ourselves, and become more than we were yesterday. Angel Millar. All right, so there it is. A wonderful piece that really explores, well, I mean, this seeming backlash that maybe we're seeing. I've seen some of it, and I don't know that I always call it an academic backlash, but I do hear some of what he's talking about at conferences that I go to. And it's an interesting conversation to have. And it's so interesting, in fact, that I reached out to Angel Millar, actually, just recently to say, hey, would you come on the show and read your piece for me or do a reading for us? And he asked me that I would read it, and I said, okay, I would. But then also, I asked him if he would come on the show. We could talk about this and this issue and talk a little bit about these two books, The Art and Science and his new book that's coming out, The Three Stages of Initiatic Spirituality, which I think will be a phenomenal book. And he agreed. So, you guys, it'll be really cool. Have Angel Millar on in the next few weeks, probably the first part of next year, January. And just remember, next week, this podcast is coming out on the 15th, so there will be an episode on the 22nd, but then there will not be an episode coming out on the 29th or on the 5th. We'll be dark for 2 weeks, and episodes of the show will start again on the 12th of January. So we have our two-week break. It's my mini vacation. And really, I guess I kind of just use that time to catch up on emails and do all the other back-end stuff for this podcast. So I hope you found that last piece interesting. I hope you found it uplifting and maybe even an affirmation of sorts. But anyway, I hope you enjoyed. I hope you have a great week. We did go dark on the Masonic Roundtable last week because Jason Richards' eyeballs were on fire, you guys. They looked so red. He could barely see out of his eyes, and we said, you gotta go take care of your eyes. We can't do a show. So we had to cancel, but we'll be back this week, hopefully, barring any emergencies, and we'll see you guys on Thursday at 8:30 Central, 9:30 Eastern. Lastly, head on over to YouTube. Give us a subscribe, like our videos there. We get a lot of great traction when that happens. We get new guys listening to the show. We have people who want to join Freemasonry because they listen to the show, and that's fantastic. That's what we want. That's all possible, again, because of the producers. So if you're a producer, a fellow, or a contributor, thank you very much. If you are on the fence about it, well, just allow me to pull you over and say, please do consider helping us out. If every little bit helps. Thank you so much to all of you. I hope, again, you have a wonderful week, and we'll talk to you all next week, and then not again until January. So, until next week, everybody, be safe, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.